want to turn to the book of Proverbs, looking in chapters 30 and 31. And I tell you what, the entire 31st chapter is just an amazing chapter, particularly all of that about the virtuous woman. But the most interesting thing about chapters 30 and 31 are that they are not Solomon. These two chapters were some that may very well have been collected by Solomon to include, but he didn't write them. He didn't write these two chapters. Someone else did. In fact, we see in chapter 30 that these are the words of Agur, the son of Jacob. So, it's not Solomon. And yet some of the most interesting material in the entire book is in these two chapters. It just goes to show that even though Solomon was the wisest man in the world, he wasn't the only wise individual in the world. And that even someone as wise as Solomon could still learn from somebody else. There are a few things he should have learned that he didn't learn, but he could still learn from other people. Verse 4 of chapter 30, Agur says, "Who has ascended up into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fist? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name and what is his son's name, if thou canst tell?" Of course, the idea of this is that nobody can do those things. But of course, we know there's one who can, God. What is his name? His name is God. What is his son's name? His name is Jesus. So even though I don't know that that's what Agur had in mind when he made these statements, he said, "Who has ascended up into heaven?" Well, we know who. Jesus. Who descended down from heaven? Jesus. He said he can do all of these things. Who gathered the wind in his fist? You remember when he said, "Peace be still"? Even the wind and the waves obeyed him. He didn't even need his fist, just his voice. He could quiet them, he could gather it together. Who has bound water, the waters, in a garment? And that would be a neat trick to try to do. You ever try to, kind of like a bucket with a hole in it, you try to use a shirt or, you'll wind up with it wet. You'll get a little bit of water in that towel or article of clothing, but you can't just carry a bucket full of water in something like that. But Jesus could have if he'd wanted to. God could have if he'd wanted to. Who has established all the ends of the earth? Of course, God did that as well. And Jesus, of course, involved in the creation of the world. Decided where things were going to be and how things were going to be. They did those things. Verses 7 through 9 then, he says, "Two things have I required of thee, deny me them not before I die. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me." That sounds like a whole lot more than two things, but we'll see the parallels here or the contrast. In verse 9 then he says, "Lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain," or in other words, bring dishonor on God's name. Now here's the two things he's asking. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Give me enough to get by with. Well, the part of the key to that is learning to be content. For some folks, it doesn't matter how much God gives them, they'll go out and steal some more. And other folks, it doesn't matter how little they have, they can have enough. Seems like they can make do with less than everybody else. So that's not always, obviously if you don't have anything, you don't have anything. But God gives us, if we are His followers, He says, promises us, we'll seek His kingdom first, and He'll give us the things that we need. Those necessities of life, He'll take care of that. He'll make sure we have enough. Now then, if we go and waste them, that's not His fault. That's our fault. He gives us enough. And I dare say all of us, even those on the smallest of limited income, we have enough. It's the luxury items that we tried to buy to keep up with the next door neighbor. I can't say the Joneses anymore since Sister Jones is back there now. I can't say keeping up with the Joneses anymore. I can't, have to find a new phrase. But we always try to do one better than the neighbors. And that gets us into trouble. It's not because God hasn't given us enough. It's because we haven't properly stewarded that. We haven't shown proper stewardship. So, but that idea of not giving me too much. Don't give me poverty or riches. Because if I have too much, I'll deny you. You know, there's some poor folks that do that. It's not just having too much. That's just a bad attitude. Denying God. Or be poor and steal. But we need to watch out for those things. In verse 20, such is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I've done no wickedness. We live in a society full of that today, don't we? Think about all of the immorality in our society. And what is their biggest... We haven't done anything wrong. We're not bad people. It's just an alternate lifestyle. Or, well, you'd do the same thing if you were in my shoes. Or if the same thing had happened to you when you were a teenager, then you'd be in the same place I am now. Or, you know, and on people go about, I haven't done anything wrong. The prostitutes, so brash, they stand wherever they want to stand and solicit the men. That's no different than it was in Solomon's day. He said he looked out the window and he saw one of them on the street beckoning to the young man to come into her place. Things haven't changed much, haven't they? You know, we talk about the more things get, it's so different than it was in Solomon's time. Some things never change. Some things never change. They say of that, prostitution is the oldest profession. And I don't know how that beat out farming and shepherding, but I guess those two aren't considered professions. I don't know. Or mothering, for that matter. Eve was a mother long before there were any prostitutes around. But still, the idea that this type of woman, and you know, men, the same thing. In fact, I think a lot of times the men are worse than the women. And sometimes the women will look to this, but I'm just doing the same thing the men do. Well, that doesn't make it any more right just because they do it. So we need to learn from that. We need to watch out for that. But that is exactly the way people are. They do their wrong, and then they say, I haven't done anything wrong. And done anything bad. Just done what everybody else does. They don't realize that what everybody else does is just as bad. It's just as wrong. And then he says, there are four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. And we can learn from almost anything, including a bad example that we just talked about with the adulterous woman. But here are some things we can learn from that are exceeding wise. Little things. The ants. Ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. You know, you don't see the ants starving to death through the winter. Because they didn't have enough supplies late by day. They plan. They work during the summer to make sure they've got enough stored up to make it through the winter. The conies. These are often considered to be a type of a badger. A little animal that lives in the rocks. Like a pack rat or a raccoon kind of creature. A badger of sorts. But the conies are but a feeble folk. Yet they make their houses in the rocks. That's a pretty hard thing to do. But they know they're not real tough. They know that there are a lot of animals out there that could whoop them pretty good if they wanted to. So what do? Well, they go live in the cracks and crevices of the rocks so that those animals can't get to them. You know, the lion, the bear, and all of those kind of things can't get into those cracks in the rocks that these creatures can live in. Then he says the locusts. The locusts have no king, yet go forth, all of them by bands. In other words, they keep together. They just like an army but they don't have a king. They don't have a general that's leading the army. They know how to do that. They can do it on their own. I think about that with the birds and the way that the geese fly in V formation. Who taught them how to do that? How did they know how to do that? Well, if God taught them how to do that, there's no way anybody else could have. Then he says, the spider taketh hold with her hands and is in king's palace. If you can ever get your house rid of spiders, you become something. That's a job. Those little spiders get wherever they want to get. You just can't get rid of them. You can have the bug man come and spray for them. They'll be back for long. They'll be back. It's not going to keep them away. Those little spiders, they use their little hands, and they don't have hands like we have, but they use the web. If you've ever watched one spinning its web, I tell you what, it's amazing. They can do a better job than most seamstresses that are experts in the field of sewing. You know, it's amazing, and yet God created them to be able to do that. Most of us, if we had something as sticky as that spider web and we were trying to deal with it, we'd wind up with a big wad. That's all we have, the big ball of stuff, and it'd be stuck to one hand and then the other. But boy, they know just what they're doing. See, God created even the little things in this world with great detail, with great care, and great precision. It's one of the most amazing things. Another one of those things that just makes it amazing to think about how anybody could believe that all of that just happened. And that God didn't create it that way. Then we come to chapter 31. Chapter 31 is the words of King Lemuel. This is the prophecy that his mother taught him. I guess his mother wanted him to be a good man. She wanted him to be a good king, and she wanted him to get a good wife. And so here are the things that she taught him. Of course, she taught him in verse 4 that if he wanted to be a good king, he didn't need to be drinking wine. He says, it is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they forget and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. He says, that's not the place for that. And then she goes on to say, give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish. Now, we don't give strong drink to those that are ready to perish nowadays, but what do we give them? We give them morphine. It's the same kind of thing. In other words, give the painkiller to the person that's on a deathbed. While you're alive, you don't need to be taking that substance that's going to affect your mind in that way. But when you get to the point where you're on your deathbed, then it's time for that kind of thing. But then he goes on in verse 8, she told him to open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. In other words, speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. You ever notice that there's sometimes somebody that they don't get their say in something? They just always get pushed around and bossed around and bullied, and they never have a chance to speak up. Well, she told her son, if he was going to be king, take the side of the underdog. Stick up for the little guy. Don't be part of the crowd that bullies you. It's a good message that all of us need to learn. Speak up. If you see somebody being mistreated, say so. Speak up about it. Don't just let it go. Oh, that's none of my business. I'm not involved. If somebody's being mistreated, and you know about it, you are involved. We saw that last week, that the righteous uphold justice, but the wicked says, I didn't see anything. The wicked refuses to see it. So we need to watch out for that attitude, and we need to have the attitude of sticking up for those who can't speak up for themselves. Then verse 10. Who can find a virtuous woman? I don't know if that's like those other questions earlier that just doesn't have an answer. Maybe nobody can. I don't. You know, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. A good wife is worth more than money. which is a good thing, because I've heard it said you can't have both. But I have to throw some of those in every once in a while. You know, they often, the fellow says, well, I had money and didn't have a woman, and now I've got a woman and I don't have money. So you can't have both at the same time. But this woman that's described here in Proverbs 31 is a very special woman. And not only she let her husband keep his money, she helped him make some more. She is a special woman, no doubt. And I don't know how a woman could do all of the things that she does. And as the list goes on and on, the things that it says she does, she gets up in the middle of, while it's still night, to start getting food ready for her family, and then she's out, she works till late into the night, and I don't know how she survived. I guess maybe that's why the women died at such an early age. But if she worked like this, she worked, I know, you know, nowadays, we gripe and complain about having to load a dishwasher, or about having to put clothes in the washing machine, and all these kind of things. And how can we gripe about such things? You know, we've got all of these time-saving, convenience items, and yet it seems like it takes us more time than before they had them. Now folks are so busy they don't have time to sit down and talk to you. It used to be, before they had washing machines and dishwashers and refrigerators and all of the microwave ovens and all these things. Back before, 100 years ago, folks could sit and talk. They could take a walk. So they could do all these things. How did they have so much more time than we have? When we've got all of these labor-saving devices that are supposed to help make our life easier and faster, what's going on? We should be able to do this. But this woman, I don't know, ladies, when was the last time you sewed one of your dresses? And sewed clothes for your husband and your kids? Oh, you go out and buy them already made. And you just, she did all of that. She prepared all the food without a microwave. Without even a gas or electric stove. You just turned it on and it's ready. You know, she had to kindle that fire. Probably had to chop the wood herself. She got all that together. Amazing. Verse 14 says she's bringing her food from afar. She's like the merchant ship. Well, all we got to do is run down to the grocery store and pick it up. She had to go out and get the food and figure out, you know, where she's supposed to find it and what she's supposed to do. Amazing, amazing. The work that she accomplished. Her husband safely trusted in her. Verse 12 says she'll do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She considers a field and buys it, verse 16. She's got her hands into everything, doesn't she? She's busy. She's got a lot of work to do. But you know what? She doesn't have time to sit around. She doesn't have time to be idle. Verse 27 says, she looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. We don't have time, as parents in Christian, we don't have time to be lazy. There's no room for laziness in parenting. Parenting, unlike most jobs, is actually a 24-hour-a-day job. You know, almost any other job that we could imagine, we get some time off, you know, somewhere. You know, even those folks, even soldiers, they get some leave every once in a while, but not parents. Hey, for 18 or 20 years, 24 hours a day. If something happens with those kids, you got to leave whatever you're doing to take care of it. Or else you're going to have to, you know, you got to find somebody else to help you to be able to take care of that. But you're the one that's responsible. And so she took care of all these things. She looked well to the ways of her household. But notice what happened, verse 28. Her children arise up and call her blessed, and her husband also. And he praises her. Now this is kind of a two-edged sword. This is kind of a two-way street. Husbands, if you'll praise your wife a little more, she'll do better. do more to please you if you'll praise her. On the other hand, a lot of times, if the wife will work hard to please the husband, he'll praise her more. Now, when you put those together, what you wind up with is a happy household. He's praising her, and she's working hard to please him, and so he praises her some more, so she works even harder to please him, and before long, they're so happy, you think they're still in their honeymoon. Now, the other way that works, is exactly the opposite. He doesn't praise her, he gripes. And so she says, I don't want to do anything for him. I don't want to please him. He just gripes all the time. So she doesn't do anything to please him. And then he just has something more to gripe about. And so she doesn't want to please him, so he gripes more. And she doesn't please him, and he gripes more. And pretty soon, well, we've seen how one out of every two marriages ends in our country. Somebody's got to take the first step. And it can be frustrating when two people have gone down that path of not pleasing and griping for long enough. And that goes the other way around, too, with the husband pleasing the wife and the wife griping. It goes both ways, either way. But that, you want your children to rise up. You want your spouse to bless you and praise you. Maybe you have to be the one to take the first step. Go out of your way to please. On the other side, you want that person to please you, you need to take the first step. Go out of your way to praise them every time they do something good. Every time. Every time they've done something good. And you will see a happier relationship. And it is difficult many times, you know, when we're tired and irritable, or sick, or under the weather, whatever, and the kids are causing turmoil and working late shifts and double shifts and all these kind of things. It gets hard to keep that kind of good attitude going, but that's the time it's most important. Verse 30. All of these things that she did, however, are something that any woman can do. But verse 30 specifies something very special. It says, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman that fears the Lord, she shall be praised. You see, all of the rest of that, it makes for a good wife, but it's all meaningless if she doesn't fear the Lord. And there are a lot of women out there that are good wives in the sense that they take care of the house and they feed, they cook and clothe their families and take care of their business and all these kind of things, and they do fine at that. But do you fear the Lord? Whoever we are, we've got to fear the Lord if we want to be praised by Him. Favor is deceitful. You ever notice that? Somebody that likes you now doesn't like you in a few weeks or a few months, a couple of years. I remember the fellas that I was, boy, when we were in grade school, we were never going to be apart. We were best buddies. I don't even know where they live now. The guys in high school, I hadn't been out of school as long as some, you know. But those things change. Those people move, and they don't send you forwarding addresses. Maybe they didn't like you as much as you liked them. You never know. Maybe that's what it was. They didn't like you. But that favor can be deceitful. And beauty, physical beauty he's talking about here. Spiritual beauty lasts. That's permanent. But physical beauty, I'm sorry, ladies, you can work as hard as you want to. You can stay slim and trim. You can even get plastic surgery. But hey, you know what? Time is going to catch up with you. Gentlemen, well, y'all know. It's already caught up with you. So, I mean, we know. You can only fight against aging for so long, and against eventually that beauty, that physical beauty, it's going to fade away. It's going to fade away. But the fact of the matter is that the spiritual beauty, the fearing of the Lord, the cheerful countenance, now, you know, those things last. Those spiritual attributes. Someone may be absolutely gorgeous when they're 17, 18, 19, 20, whatever, and they may be the most horrible, hideous person on the inside you'd ever want to run across, or that you wouldn't want to run across. When they lose that outer beauty, the only thing that's going to be left is that inner ugliness. On the other hand, somebody might be, as my grandfather said about one of my girlfriends, homely, and she may not, you know, may not be real attractive physically, but maybe the kind of person who, because of a cheerful attitude and a smile always on your face and a kind word to say, are beautiful to everybody that meets you. I've met a lot of folks that fit into both of those categories. I've met folks who, by supermodel status, were gorgeous. They could have been on the cover of magazines, but I wouldn't have wanted to be around them. They were just ugly inside. And then I've met other people who, the first time I saw them, I could hardly stand to look at them. But because they were such a loving, kind person, I got to the point, I love being around that person. The old saying, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. As Christians, we need to use spiritual eyes when we view people and look for beauty. We need to look for the spiritual attributes. Do they fear the Lord? Do they have a kind word to say? Do they have a smile? Do they have cheerfulness about them, a joy? Are they loving? And that's also the kind of person that we want to be. We don't want to be the kind of person that nobody's going to want to be around. It makes everybody miserable. That's not the kind of thing we want to do to others. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps you need to get some of God's beauty into your life. If you need to come, we ask you to come as we stand in this.